had my coach tell me just before our third South African game that I wasn't going to be playing, and that I was going to be sent home.
Today's guest has represented the women's Australian cricket team and currently plays for the Brisbane Heat, Holly Furling. In today's episode, she talks about taking a hat-trick with the first three balls in men's A-grade cricket when she was just 14, overcoming serious injuries and equality in women's sport. If you like today's episode, please subscribe and leave us a review. Enjoy. Holly, thanks for joining us.
No dramas. Thanks for having me.
Our absolute pleasure. I thought we'll start with the interview. You're from Kingaroy.
I'm
from Toowoomba. So,
oh, no way.
Yeah. From the sticks.
That's it. Country.
I'm from Brisbane.
People know Kingaroy either Matt Hayden, Joe Bjorke-Peterson, or Peanuts. That's everyone.
Peanuts.
That's it. But no, we've got like Matt Ballon's from there as well. Like played
the great
Origins, for Queensland, and yeah.
Really?
Yeah, from there.
Don't get me started on the list from Toowoomba, mate. That's even bigger. That's even
the Darren Lockyer Highway.
A small place, though.
Yeah, I know. I'll give you credit for that. Definitely. So, what was it like growing up in Kingaroy?
Yeah, like it was awesome. I had plenty of people as I was growing up asking me why wasn't I moving to Brisbane or anywhere like that for sporting scholarships or anything like that. But I had everything in Kingaroy. Like I had my family there. Where I lived, there was a park up the road where there was a centre wicket that my brother and I used to train at every weekend actually probably every day.
Wow. Okay.
And then up the road was the footy fields and everything like that. So my brother could go train there. So honestly, Kingaroy was the best upbringing for me. And yeah. I was very lucky to have my family around me that was fully supportive of everything I was doing. But I think being from a smaller school as well, I had a wonderful principal that allowed me to take off for sport whenever and drop everything. So, no, it was awesome.
Was that Kingaroy Primary School or something? What was that called?
I was Tabinga State School. Yeah, so little did I know that my PE teacher from that was actually going to be my A-grade captain for cricket later on. And I actually had to ask him for permission to trial for cricket in the first place, and he didn't think I'd be interested. So it's
funny how it comes around.
Well, I played a little bit. I played a lot of netball. I'd made the Wide Bay netball team, the Wide Bay touch team. I trialed for softball and did quite well, but broke my arm doing that. So missed the trials for that one. But then, finally asked Mr. Geiger if I could go trial. And this was literally the following day the trials were. And he was like, oh, yeah, sure, like go along, but see how you go. Don't know if you'll be interested, but because I used to bowl against my brother all the time, like in the backyard.
Your older brother?
Younger. Okay. So it was even for a little bit there. So yeah, so I
how young is he? How many years younger?
So he's almost 2 years.
Okay.
So until he hit puberty, it was even. He was an opening batter and I was an opening bowler.
It was perfect training.
I was a rubbish bat and he dabbled in bowling every now and then. So it kind of worked out all right.
A great balance.
Until he started bowling bounces back at me. And just when it all changed. I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore.
So are you a good batsman now?
I'm working on it. My goal is to progressively get myself up a spot each year.
So
I've worked my way to 10 now. Okay. I started at 12, actually.
Yeah.
Cricket, you can't even play 12, but a few years ago for the Queensland side, you could play 12. So 12th could field and bowl, but not bat. That was me.
So it was perfect, right?
I was rubbish.
So would it be fair to say that you could be, at this point, not hopefully in the future, the Glenn McGrath of Australian women's cricket?
I would like to. I mean,
what was
like,
that? He's a great bowler.
He holds the record.
I remember, one time
for the most ducks. But so maybe not that one.
There was one game, I'm trying to remember when it was, when he we needed him. He was end, and he got a century.
Jason Gillespie got a century.
It's Gillespie.
Yeah.
He was good with the bat. I think you're the wrong person.
They were the good old
days. He was a great bowler. You can't say that.
No, line and length. If I can do that, then I've done my thing. I'm done.
So you played some other sports as well?
Yeah. Played netball right up and through. So I debuted for the Australian team for cricket in year 12, my first 4 weeks of year 12.
Wow.
But I was still playing rep netball then. So, I played, Div 2 state comp as well. So I played for Wide Bay in that, but it was open women's and everything like that. And I loved it. Honestly, that's the one thing I actually miss at the moment is my netball. I get my netball fixed by going and watching the Firebirds and catching up with a couple of them now and then. But I loved my netball. I used to go along, like, so Wide Bay schoolgirls and stuff like that. I used to make PMPs for state. But I was a goalkeeper, so then they'd put me up against a goal shooter where literally I came up to her shoulders and I'm sitting there looking at her. I'm like, yeah, I know who they're trying to make look good here. So
yeah, exactly.
I was too short to be a goalkeeper. Right. You can't beat height.
So just going away from that, you were going to school and you made your debut for Australia in cricket.
Yeah.
What school was that then? That was in Kingaroy.
Yeah, that was Kingaroy State High. So I got the call Boxing Day the year before, so that would have been 2012. Boxing Day 2012. And this lady, she'd been a manager of a kind of an Australian youth team I'd been a part of, and I was like, oh, I took her call and she's like, oh, are you sitting down? I said, oh, no, we're not at lunch. It's fine. Like, I'm fine. And she's like, no, sit down right now. I'm like, what are you even talking about? Anyway, she then told me that I was off to India for the first 4 weeks of year 12. And I sat there for like maybe about 5 minutes, just kind of going, okay, this is happening.
This is real.
Yeah, that's it. And kind of going, okay, like trying to get my emotions together, going, okay, this is awesome. I'm going away with some of my idols, like Elise Perry and everything like that. And thought it was a joke for a little bit. But then I was sitting there going, oh my God, India, curries. Like, I can't handle pepper on my steak. I'm going to die.
I don't like curry. I don't like rice.
I can't do this. So anyway, went out and told Mum and Dad, and they thought I was kidding. So I didn't know what to believe.
Who were you playing, like club-wise, for then?
So I wasn't playing at home anymore. I was playing in Brisbane. So every weekend I'd have to go and train with Brisbane. But it was only after my first year of playing for the Queensland women's side. So it was
like India, Queensland.
Yeah, I got catapulted.
Holy
absolutely. I was like chucked in the deep end.
Was Brisbane the furthest place you've been to up until that point as well?
I've been around different states just for nationals and stuff like that, but not really. Like, most of my travel had come from cricket and domestic. The only other place that I had been was New Zealand. That was for an Australian youth tour. But even then, New Zealand's Australia, so pretty much.
So you're like from the country. I'm just trying to put this in perspective. If you're in the country, you're playing cricket with your brother. He's starting to throw a few bounces at you, and then a couple of years later, you're going to India with Australia while you're doing maths at school.
In Kingaroy.
In Kingaroy. Well. You're not even in Brisbane.
That would be like, for example, I grew up in Toowoomba.
Yeah.
I had to move to Brisbane when I was 15 to like be closer to like, to be closer to it, do you mean? So I think that's quite like a great story as well.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
And what did you find?
You'd been a superstar at school, by the way.
Yeah. No, that's it. I was envied by the end of it because my attendance was like 70% or something like that. And people were blowing up because anyone with 70% attendance couldn't go to the school formal, but I was allowed to the principal was like, yeah, Holly's a little bit different than
it's
you guys wagging.
A little bit different,
so.
Guys.
Yeah, actually representing the country.
That's it.
What are you doing? Get into Australia, your team, then we'll get you.
No, exactly. No, so,
What was the transition? Like, you've all this going on and then you're in the professional environment of an Australian cricket team. What was that transition like? Was there any trouble shooting at the time where, you know, you needed to do like initiations with the team? Or how were the girls towards you, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting. That same year we had an Ashes tour in England as well that we were preparing for after we came back from the World Cup. So everything was kind of one after the other, and probably the most difficult thing for me was balancing my schoolwork and my sport. I chose not to do year 12 over 2 years, and I was one of those people, one of those crazy
OP
people.
Well?
Yes, I was doing an OP. Yeah. So I was doing Maths B, Maths C, English, Chemistry, Health Ed and PE. So I wanted to do really well and wanted to stay on top of everything. So that was kind of the difficult thing for me. But I guess being away from the city centre, I had to do all my sessions by myself. So I was sent everything.
Yeah, wow.
But I kind of took it on myself. If my team was at the gym, so the Queensland girls, if they were at the gym at 6 a.m, I made sure that same day I'd go to the gym at 6 a.m.
Yeah, okay.
Just to kind
keep
of feel
that routine.
Okay. Exactly. And to kind of feel like I was still part of them and what they were doing. I was very lucky. My dad as well, he loves his fitness and everything like that. So he'd do the running sessions with me, and he was that constant coach. He'd be catching balls for me or throwing balls for me, coaching, sledging my brother, whatever I needed, really. But I was very lucky to have that. So
it'd be hard to do that by yourself. Yeah, like it's one thing to be motivated, and exactly. I'm sure you were. But like when you have that team environment and you go to train every day, you might be having a bad day or you're not quite up to it. But when you've got a group around you, it's sort of
so much easier.
Yeah, it's so much easier.
Or even at that age, no one's there to guide you. If you're away from the team that you should be doing these things, you don't have somebody motivating you to do that. So it's fantastic that you took it upon yourself.
I think too, I didn't have too much of a social life outside of all that. Like I use my lunch times to catch up with teachers or to, the other thing was I actually used to steal a mate who I used to play cricket with, and I'd bowl at lunchtime and he'd catch for me if I had to do that session that day and everything.
During school,
School. Yeah,
wow.
So at lunchtime, I didn't miss any classes, but no.
Yeah.
So
it's fair to say that you are living and breathing cricket at this time.
Yeah, and schoolwork, and that's about it.
It's a bit of school and then any little gaps in between, you might be trying to catch something. I think it's fascinating.
I think we forgot really to mention as well, when you were 14, you made your men's A grade debut in Kingaroy.
Yep.
And took a hat trick off your first three balls.
I did. Wow. No, that was, that actually came from that PE teacher. He wasn't the captain then. He was kind of just around the setup, and he actually asked Mum and Dad, can Holly come play with us? I think she's up to the standard. She'll be right. And Mum and Dad are like, nah. Put it in perspective. Dad's a copper. Mum's a high school teacher. So they're like,
they're protecting you.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. So they were like, oh, no. Finally, though, they let me go. And, neither of them were there. They just dropped me off. They thought I wouldn't bowl. They thought I was just fielding in the field. And I came on first change and, took a couple wickets. I didn't even think, like the hat trick ball, I didn't even think that I'd get it or anything like that. Like, there's so many times you'd be on a hat trick and it's just like, oh, you try and whatnot. But the worst thing was, I actually put down leg. I've stuffed this. Yeah, it's a wide, damn it. But he's edged it behind.
Oh.
Like, leg lance, the worst place to get out. And he got caught behind. So, and then I had a dot ball, I think on the fourth ball, and then the fifth ball was another wicket. So I missed the double hat trick by one ball.
That would have been like the most incredible thing ever.
Dad was working, Mum was at the shops, and someone's gone up to Mum in the shop, says how little Kingaroy is, and it's like, Holly's just taken a hat trick, and Mum's like, no, that hasn't happened, but
while the game was on.
That's it. And then as soon as we got washed out, I think I finished with figures 4 for 8. Off my 4 overs or something.
That's unreal.
And then we got washed out. I think we won on Duckworth Lewis, and I had registration forms like thrown in my face going,
quick,
rest of the season, you're doing it.
So your teammates, the other men, like, as they were, did they know who you were? Like before, when you rocked up, like were they, you know, like, how'd they take you?
I think Darren Greger had spoken about me a couple of times, but that was literally the first time
they were
meeting
their jaw to just drop.
They loved it. They thought it was the greatest thing ever. And to make it even, to make it even better, our two clubs the clubs that were playing, they're the two rival Kingaroy teams. Oh.
So it's actually
it was
a big
better.
Deal. Like,
No,
was there a little bit of sledging? Like, Holly, you're in for a big one today, mate. Like,
I can't sledge because anything that I say, I'll undo whatever I just did. Like, I just tend to let the ball, not witty. I've got nothing, but
you just bowl hard.
They though let rip to anyone from then on. And, funnily enough, one of the guys that I got out, I went to school and I was friends with, his sister. So I don't think she's still letting him live it down. The fact that he was a part of the hat trick.
Really? So, got you out.
So it was awesome. And I think that was the cool part about the men's cricket is I think that shaped me as a bowler. Like you'd get wickets by them being tentative or them going too hard at you, but you learnt soon enough that if you bowl in the wrong areas, you get punished and if you get rewarded for good bowling. So, I was very lucky to have a very positive experience with men's cricket and boys' cricket growing up.
Yep.
I know some girls haven't had that experience, but I guess the cool thing now, though, is that girls can actually finally play in a competition with other girls, whether it be there's plenty of girls' teams actually going around playing in boys' comps, so they've actually got kind of the network around them there, but they're actually able to stick it to the boys, which is awesome.
Yeah, sure. You talk about you had a positive experience with men. Were there any times where you had negative experiences, you know, we talked about the sledging earlier, but was there times where they'd give you a harder time than they would other guys because of who you are as a female?
There was one time, I think, when I was batting, and I can't even remember who we were playing, and they were just constantly pitching in short into my ribs, and I was going okay, but the PE teacher, Mr. Geiger, was at the other end, and he kind of sorted it out quick, smart, like, just going, like, doing? What are you trying to prove here? Yeah, it's exactly. Like, I'm batting 11.
And you're
like, what are you doing? Exactly. Yeah. So, a couple of times like that, but apart from that, like, I had such a good group of guys around me that protected me, like, no end. But I guess the thing, though, playing men's cricket and boys' cricket, and it's something that a lot of people don't think about, is often the facilities aren't open for the girls.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like,
that's right.
Going to the toilet and stuff like that and getting changed.
So what would you do?
I'd have to get one of the guys to stand guard outside the toilet while I went, and then everything like that. And then getting changed, like, I didn't think anything of it, but you'd get changed, and just because we didn't really have change rooms at King Roy and everything like that, but you just get changed out in the open in front of everyone. And thinking back now, I'm like,
wow,
geez, that's not ideal, that's really.
Not
so,
ideal.
But it's incredible kind of how far it is coming. And
okay.
I actually was doing my level 2 coaching course the other day, and we were talking about coaching women and girls and the differences and stuff like that. And so many coaches just didn't realize those sorts of issues to make a female more, I guess, comfortable around playing. Like, playing, like, we don't mind. Like, playing is playing, but it's all those other things in and around cricket that makes it more inclusive or less inclusive.
I definitely agree with that. Mm. So up until what age were you playing in King Roy then, and before you started to move into more of a professional environment and then sort of going on to earn, like, a professional contract and things like that?
I played up until I was about 15, 16 in the men's comp, and then from 16 onwards I was basically told that if I want to play for the Queensland Fire that I have to be playing women's cricket to be around it. It is slightly different, like the lengths that I bowl are probably slightly fuller than the guys, but apart from that it's same. So I did that. I'd go to Brisbane, so I got my hours up pretty quick with my learner. So year 11 I'd Friday pack up, mum would drive down with me, we'd drive to Brisbane, stay there, train Saturday with the Queensland Fire, go to game on the Sunday, that was just a club game, and then drive home Sunday night to then go to school Monday.
Yeah,
I did that throughout year 11.
How far is the drive?
Two and a half hours.
Yeah, so
3 hours. The Blackbutt Range was all closed then because of all the flooding and everything like that. So if you didn't time it properly, you were
up to three and a half hours of driving every weekend.
Yep.
So you would have got your hours up real quick.
Super quick. And then
100 hours.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then after that, as soon as I had my license, I'm a end of the year baby, so and I was kept back as well, so I was the oldest in the group basically. So mum basically then year 12 she was like, "See ya." go by yourself and everything like that. So that was what I did every weekend. And
that would have been pretty tough for the family as well.
Yeah, no. And they come down and watch me and everything like that. But I think that I had to be so organized in order to be able to go, okay, every weekend, this is what it looks like.
Absolutely.
But my first contract was, I was 16. First contract was $900 for the Queensland Fire.
What? $900
a week? $900 total.
For how long? For what period of time? Like a
full year.
Full
year.
A calendar year.
Yep. And we'd play 18 games for the Queensland Fire. And you'd be training, I wouldn't say we train a lot more now and everything like that, but I'd say we'd have 2, maybe 3 skill sessions a week that I was missing, so I had to make that up in my own time.
Yep.
2 to 3 gym sessions a week. And then everyone else has their lives outside of that. So really it was pocket money. And to put it into perspective as well, a good cricket bat costs you somewhere between $900 and $1,000.
Does it really?
You were out of pocket.
Have you had to have another job outside of the game during that time?
No, well, I was lucky. I kind of just living at home and everything like that. It was all good, but
some of the other girls.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cricket was just something else that we did. It was our career. So unlike the boys, their career is their cricket.
Yeah.
For us, our career is whatever we do outside of cricket.
And
so
you got
part time largely.
Yeah.
But you guys do the same amount of training.
Yeah, I would argue now we do. Yeah. Back then, probably not, because we just, it wasn't viable. You couldn't, being paid only $900, you couldn't exactly flick your full-time job and keep going with
yeah,
it.
Exactly. So, sure. Was that a first-year contract, or was that a typical contract that everyone sort of received?
So I think I was one of the lowest because I was first in, but I don't think it was anything more than $1,500, to be honest. So I then went like from there, then was on an Aussie contract when I was 17, and I think that one was maybe 10 grand. And that's okay. Similarly, yeah. Though, you're going away.
So you'd be on an Australian
contract.
Commitment
would be longer, wouldn't it?
A commitment was definitely longer. So yeah. Even though you were still kind of training around, yeah. you had to be up for the whole year, basically. Because yeah. If you had the Ashes tour and everything like that, you're away for almost 12 months, not 12 months, 12 weeks a year.
So you, like those, for other, for the other, girls who played, and had sort of like full-time jobs out, they wouldn't be able to work during that 10-week period either, would they?
No, so they had to. That was almost the toughest part. There was actually, I think, when the project first started, they actually did a story on one of the girls in my team, Jess Cameron, and now Jess Stuffen.
Yeah.
She's actually playing for Collingwood now in the women's team.
Oh, okay.
But she made a comment which is so true, and she said, we play for the love of the game and the love of the baggy green and everything like that, because why else would we do it? We're going backwards in our careers outside. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got to have that super flexible employer that allows them to leave for 12 weeks at a time and everything like that.
Yeah.
So we're so lucky with how far that it has come, but it was tough in those periods. I was lucky that I was still at school and just about to start uni and everything like that, that I wasn't as affected by it, but
right.
Some of those other girls that had to balance everything, I don't know how they did it.
How do you feel, sort of elaborating on, you're talking about the contract, how do you feel in relation to, obviously, what men get paid? I mean, I think Chris Lynn recently just was offered, was it 1.8?
1.86.
For 8 weeks?
Yes, at the IPL.
So, not bad. I mean, that's just an example. It's obviously an inflated price of the nature of the competition, but how do you feel in terms of what women get paid in relation to the men? What do you feel about this whole topic?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been asked a fair bit about it, and honestly, the inroads that cricket has made recently with our new MOU, and the good thing with all the other female sports, I catch up with a lot of other female athletes, and we all say, like, we don't see each other as competitors. We actually see it as a good thing if then cricket jumps ahead, because then netball's then got
to keep up,
don't it? Exactly.
Yeah.
You keep up or you fall behind.
Yeah.
But I think equality is equal to the time that we put in and equal to the standard that we're upholding. The men have been doing it for so much longer, and the product that is the Big Bash and some of these other tournaments, it's unbelievable, but we're getting there. If you compare us to where, there was actually a stat running around, if you compare us to where the Big Bash was at, we're actually par on with where they were in terms of viewership and everything
really?
Like that. So where
when it originated.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So it's incredible kind of how far that it's coming and how quickly that it has happened.
Absolutely.
But I don't think we should be paid the same as the men, but I think when the women's product becomes what it is, then there's got to be room to move. But likewise too, I still don't think that the women in sport as a whole are being paid for the amount of hours that they're putting in. Mm. And it's not even, like, as you guys know, it's not even just training and everything like that. It's your whole mental preparation, your tactical preparation, physical, everything.
It's 24/7, because even when you're not training, you're not playing.
You're eating properly.
You're eating properly, you're sleeping properly.
That costs money.
Exactly. And even just the mental toll, I guess, and when you're trying to, you put a lot of, like, pressure on yourself to perform. And it's a very interesting topic, and like you said, it's positive that they're making inroads and that gap's been bridged, and hopefully they can sort of continue to do that.
That's it.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I know in tennis it's equal. But I know a lot of argument that other sports men have made is that they talk about the market share.
Yeah.
That obviously men have a greater market share. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that if the men are ignoring the capacity of women, mums, daughters, then they're ignoring half the market. Market share is whatever, but that was something that I think our boys really, because the boys were in their own MOU and
completely separate.
We didn't have anything. The boys were their own. And when our Players Association actually came to us, they said, the boys actually want you guys involved. And first of all, we were like, please, like, why would they want us to have a cut of their revenue and everything like that? But they see that women's cricket is the growth area of the sport. The men's is probably as high as it's going to get. It may get a little bit bigger, but the way that 2020 is going and everything like that, it's pinnacle at the moment.
Yeah.
But everything with women's sport and women's cricket is starting to grow. So I think any sport that ignores the like, because mums make most exactly, and not even just participants. Mums are the, like, they make most of the decisions in the household. So if you're not appealing to mum and the whole family, then you're not going to get kids playing, boys playing, girls playing.
Yeah, sure.
How is, in terms of grassroots participation in women's cricket, how is that looking?
It's getting there, yeah. No, I think something like 25% now are women.
Oh, wow.
Which is, it's increased massively over the last few years. And
is, like, there anything you can put that down to, why that is? Is it the emergence of the Aussie women's team?
Yeah, the women's Aussie team has been successful for so long, but I think it's finally the visibility. It's that whole notion of you can't be what you can't see. So that was me. I felt, I didn't know that girls play cricket when I first started.
Did you have someone to look up to when, like,
not until probably 3 or 4 years in that I actually discovered Elise Perry and the way that she bowled and how young that she was. Until then, all I could see was Brett Lee on TV and everything like that. So I think the more that girls are actually able to access us, seeing us play and actually see that it's a viable option to do, then the increase that it happens. But the cool thing is, though, I go along to some of these, like, Milo Inter Cricket and T20 Blast clinics, and considering I was 12 and had no idea about women's cricket, even 14, no idea about women's cricket.
Yep.
There's a 6-year-old girl telling me that she's going to play for the Brisbane Heat and the Southern Stars one day. And that just blows my mind, because she's 6 years ahead of where I was at.
Yeah. That's huge.
So what these girls are going to be in 10, 20 years' time is just incredible.
That's exciting, isn't it? Yeah, really exciting.
For the game. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so in terms of playing for Australia, and you made your debut at what age was that?
17.
How many times have you referenced that? What do you call it? How many baggy? No, you've got caps. One. The caps?
Games, matches. Yeah. So
how many have you?
I actually don't know. I've played 3 test matches.
Okay.
So I've got to, the girls don't play as many tests as the boys. So it's almost like a one in, normally it's like 1 in every 4 years that we actually get to play a test. But
really?
I was actually in a period where we had an away Ashes and a return Ashes within
Washes?
6 months.
Is it called that?
No,
it's
not called no, that. No. Someone actually put that out there,
Washes.
But no.
The Washes. We did the Washes. 100%. That's so good.
I like that.
We did a bit of that.
Well, you have to make sure that it's the Washes and not the Washes, because that's
similar spelling
anyway.
It's probably the same thing.
But no, so I've played a test match 3 times now. Played a few 2020s, a few ODIs, and I guess my kind of transition through the Aussie team's kind of been a little bit different. I was kind of thrown into it, and I did well to start off with and everything like that, and then teams started to work me out, and it was November, not just gone, November before. I actually was playing a South African tour, and I had my coach, and this is all around, I had a couple of injuries around the place, so I was out for 7 months, so kind of learning the, I guess, the downside of elite sport. But I had my coach tell me just before our third South African game that I wasn't going to be playing, and that I was going to be sent home because they didn't need me on the tour anymore.
During the tour?
Yeah. So that was heartbreaking. And because I'm someone, I'm quite pedantic and tedious when it comes to my training and everything like that. I try and do everything perfect.
You're a process person.
Yeah.
You like the process.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I'm not someone, like, I've always been quite good with all the fitness tests and I never leave any stone unturned, but I found in that period that something wasn't clicking. I was doing everything right, but just my performance wasn't, and it was the right decision for me to go home.
Was it?
Was
there a reason given to you?
No, because and that's the tough thing too, because the coach was saying you work hard, you do everything right and everything like that. And
so
I'm sitting there going,
what
is it? And it was, I was just missing something. And
I'm
still working through that, what exactly that is. But I think it's as form kind of fluctuates sometimes, trying harder sometimes you're kind of counterintuitive. Yeah, you have no idea what you can be doing if you just kind of relax and actually just play for the love of it.
So it could be that you're putting, well, not say that it is, but maybe a little bit of that is the pressure that you're putting on yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's a massive part of sports, whether it's pressure from your coach, pressure from your family, pressure from yourself. And the other thing too is as well with a lot of these girls, now particularly the Aussie contracts are now six figures. A lot of them, so they're 1 year deals. So if they don't perform well, next year they're on 40 grand with the rest
the
of everyone else.
Not there, so that's right.
Exactly. So, even though it's amazing how far the sport's professionalized and everything like that, sport is becoming more and more our job, and that's in itself is
dynamic.
Pressure. Exactly. Yeah. So I had that. I came home. We had a final against New South Wales, which we unfortunately lost. We had a terrible game, but we had that. But then I had Big Bash not long after that, and I played four games and then was ruled out with an elbow injury needing surgery. So it just felt like one bad thing after another and just couldn't get myself back up.
So was that around the same time the, like, World Cup selection, the World Cup was on?
Yeah, so I had limited time to try and get back for the World Cup. That was the reality of it. I had the surgery and it was kind of right then and there that I actually went, okay, the things that I can control is doing my rehab well so that this doesn't happen again and so that I give myself the best chance for this selection. And then after that, it's working back on my action and getting everything back to where it used to be and where it needed to be. Because, like chicken or the egg, I was actually starting to bowl more and more sidearm, which but whether that was because I was avoiding the pain in the elbow or whether that caused the pain in the elbow, we have no idea. So we were trying to get back to me being nice and tall and over the top, but. So I had that, and then I pushed really hard for World Cup selection, and I just wasn't ready. I wasn't there, and I knew it within myself. I was actually kind of worried at the same time as well that I'd be picked and be going there and
not being ready. Yeah, and sort of the confidence not quite there as well.
Exactly. So I had that, and then missed the home Ashes as well. wasn't picked for that, and everything like that. So it kind of felt like one bad thing after another.
Yeah. So I guess like during that period for you. Would you say that in terms of like professional career, that's sort of like the hardest part for you, and you're trying to like overcome those obstacles mentally and try
I've had people like even after games now, and they say, why aren't you playing for Australia again? What's happening there? And a lot of it's just left up to selectors and everything like that. But I think the thing that I've learned along the way, whether it be injury or whether it be being dropped or anything like that, is that you got to find the positive out of it or try and turn it into a positive. Yeah. So I had stress fractures in my back when I was 18, so that was 7 months off. So I'd use that time to get as strong as I could with my core. Elbow was a time to actually finally got to go on a holiday, which was wonderful. Exactly. And then even now, so Big Bash just gone, I wasn't playing the role that I would have hoped to. My skill set, I think, is suited to opening the bowling, but the makeup of the team, I wasn't required to open the bowling. So I had to find another way to stay relevant. So I have never been able to bowl Yorkers or slower balls before because I've always just been that out and out pace that's bowled bounces and everything like that. So I had to change the way that I bowled and change my skill set really to stay relevant in the game. So now kind of if I'm a much more skillful bowler now than what I am November before Big Bash because I was forced to make that change.
Yeah, sure.
But you can look at it as whether you were forced or whatnot, but you actually took that opportunity to kind of turn it into something good.
Mm. Well, what I love about that, obviously we've all played sport, is the fact that you've had setbacks, that you've been honest with yourself and you've gone away and developed yourself and taking the positives from the negatives. I think that's a really good takeaway for any young person
looking to play. Always easy to, I think,
to
point
to
the
externalize
finger
and
blame someone else.
Absolutely.
But to sort of take that on your own shoulders and say, look, I can't control what the selectors say or selectors do or and who else is in the team, etc. But what I can control is my body, my action, and things like that. So I think that's great for any young.
And I reckon those stress records from that hat trick you dug in that.
No, ripped in a little bit harder.
Just gave them a few rib ticklers.
No, that's it. But I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason. Like I fell into cricket. Like if you had told me when I was 12 that I'd be playing professional or elite sport, I would have thought I'd be playing for the Firebirds heads down. I believe that everything kind of happens for a reason. There's something that you need to take out of every experience that then will make you better in the end.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think that's, for anyone listening that's sort of a young, aspiring athlete in general. I think that's the perfect mindset.
Well, someone who wants to be successful, I think a lot of people, they externalize, or that person didn't pick me, or they said this and it's all their fault. And I think what you've done is, maybe it's not been your fault, but you've taken responsibility and you've handled what you've done. And I think that's a great takeaway for anybody.
And I think failure is such a huge part of sport, and it is bad. Like, call it failure, call it what you want. But a lot of, I guess, the outside, so you look at a bio or something like that, it's all the good stuff. It's all the success and everything.
The highlight reel.
Exactly. Yeah. It's similarly with social media and everything like that. Mm. It's all the positives and everything like that. There's a whole lot more that kind of happens behind the scenes, or there's a whole lot more that people don't realize that actually goes on, and like we mentioned even before we started recording, we're people,
exactly.
we're sports people, but we're also people that have other interests outside of our sport and have to live life in a high pressure environment.
Yeah, like how many birthdays have you missed? Did you have a formal or you know, how many Christmases have you spent at home? Have you had to miss these kind of things? What kind of sacrifices have you made?
My school formal was the Thursday night. I left. I didn't go to the after party. I left because it was like the last, King Roy does it, like the last day of term, last day of school altogether probably.
Yeah, right.
And then that night I then got in the car. Dad drove me to Brisbane. So got there at like 2 a.m. and I was on a 6 a.m. flight to Adelaide to play.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky that I actually got to my formal.
Yeah.
And then I had my 21st, not last year, the year before, and that fell in like a 4-day period that we had off in Big Bash.
Yeah.
So my birthday's in December, so that's smack bang cricket season every year. And quite often we're playing on that day. So there's plenty that I've missed, plenty of family birthdays as well. Like, absolutely. I missed my dad's 40th. I was over in England and everything like that. There's so much that does go on. And I think that's actually something that I really like about Darren Lehman as a coach, with the boys. He, even when he was coaching the Bulls, he made sure, I think Ryan Harris, his wife was about to give birth, and he's like, "You're not playing this shield match.
I'm a big fan of that. You are to be there.
Yeah,
you
right.
You are a father, you're a husband, you're
person
not just
first,
a cricketer."
Like, as well.
Yeah,
that's
right. Because in football, it's like, I know in the UK, it's like, we got a game at 3 o'clock. She's got to get it out before then.
Like,
how dare you, sort of thing. And the crazy thing is, there's another person to take your spot. So that is a different dynamic.
Yeah, exactly.
What you're saying is you are treated more like a human.
Exactly. So, and I think Darren Lehman's approach is that, if you've got a happy team and happy individuals, they'll play better.
Yeah. 100%.
If they're not stressed about everything else going on and everything.
That's magic. That is magic.
It makes sense. 100%. It
really does. So a more cohesive team is more likely to have team success.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's
not
rocket science, is it? It works.
It's magic.
Yeah, we should coach. So, Holly, where do you see yourself in 10, 20 years?
That's the big question, isn't it? That's the big question. Yeah. No, I'm studying journalism and PR at uni at the moment at QUT.
QUT.
But I'm also, at the moment, I'm working in the newsroom at 4BC as well. So that was an opportunity that came up. The boss was commentating actually one of our games, and he knew that I've done some work with him before, Mark Braybrook, and he asked me to come just do some work experience. And then one day I got called into his office and I'm sitting there like sweating and everything. I was like, I've pressed the wrong button. Like, something's gone to air that shouldn't.
Yeah.
And he offered me a part-time job. And I said to him, I said, what does that mean? He's like, you do the same thing and you get paid. And I'm like, I'm in.
That's so good. And I just sorry to cut in, but what I find even more fascinating is that in the women's game or in women's sport, they have to do something. Whereas in the male game, especially coming in, it's like, because they don't have to do something, it's like, oh, we'll go play Xbox.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's exactly.
Well, some of our rookies are on more money than us as state players. Like the boys' rookies, they're on more than what we are across Big Bash and WNCL. Yeah. So, honestly, like you can't blame them for that. But at the same time, though, I think having that something outside of our sport makes us who we are. When you have an injury or everything like that, your whole self-worth and everything isn't tied up into you as an athlete.
You are a uni student.
You are a successful career person. Like, there's so many other things, so many 100%. Other facets in your life. I think that's something that they're just starting to now to get some of the guys as well. Like, I think they're really, to have that really good balance as well. Because the other thing too, our Players Association presented to us, something like 3/4 of all cricketers that retire each year didn't get a say in it. So whether it be injury, yeah. whether it be being dropped or something like that. So next thing they're thrown out, and then it's something like 2 or 3 years on average it takes for them to fully transition yeah. into real
where,
life.
Where do you go? And then exactly. the depression the bottom, and alcoholism.
You go from being that in the limelight, looked up to, you know, pinnacle of your career in one a chosen thing, and then you go from the to the very bottom. You exactly. know, I think that's a whole another argument.
And your whole identity as a human being is has changed fundamentally, because you've got so many different hats.
Yeah,
it's okay. I do other things.
Exactly, and I think that's kind of been the positive out of women's sport is that we've had to do something else. But I think that's at the key. Same time, though, I think as it gets more and more professional, we will continue to do something else, because I think there's things that you can learn, whether it be in business or whatever yeah, else that you're doing that can actually transfer yeah. over, and it actually gives you a bit of perspective yeah. as opposed to just
I love it.
Sport.
Like I say to our young lads at the Raw, I say, if someone held a gun to your head, would you start practicing more? And they'll be like, yeah. So why aren't you practicing more? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And I think the thing about the women is you've had to.
Yeah.
And I think when you act out of necessity, then you're going to have more better results. And I think that's a great... You have more resilience about yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
on that note, I think it's been a fascinating chat with you, Holly. Thanks yeah. for joining us.
No
we've learned a lot, and it's you know, been great to hear your story.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening, guys. And if you liked today's episode, please subscribe and leave us a review.